Hello and welcome back to another episode of Online with USU. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Dan.
And I'm Alexis.
And today we are continuing our conversation about the different learning styles that the Smarter Measure survey talks about. Or I guess it's more of a self-assessment, but...
Yeah. Yeah. And remember, we're looking at ways that you can increase the different methods of study. So you can look at the different learning styles and say, okay, I want to try something in a new format. And so that's what we're looking into. And we're looking today. We're specifically looking at solitary and social. So nice juxtaposition there, as well as oral and verbal. So let's talk about solitary first. So I thought it was funny that in the article thing that we kind of passed around and read under the solitary, it mentioned a couple of things which we'll get into, but a big chunk of it was just like, don't feel sad about if you like to study alone. You know, it's okay to study alone. And it's like, why are they apologizing? Why are they just, you know, making it seem like that anybody that studies alone feels like they need, that they're failing in some way, you know, that, you know, you have to study with other people or something like that. Yes, studying alone is perfectly legitimate. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think this is kind of funny. This goes back to conversation I've had about extroverts and introverts. You know, so people associate, you know, solitary studying with introverts. Everyone's trying to get introverts to break out of their shell, but no one's trying to get extroverts to calm down.
It is so fast. True.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think this is about, as an extrovert myself, there are times that it's good for me to take a much more reserved approach to study, you know, and going through the article and going through my thoughts, studying alone, a prime example, I think, of a solitary study method would be meditation. I mean, literally, see, most people think of meditation about calming yourself and stuff, but really meditation is about, it's about thinking, right? And so, yeah, meditate on the material. Think, I mean, really dedicate yourself to focusing your attention and your mind on a particular aspect of something you're studying on. And that is good for people. And especially for people like me that are boisterous and rowdy and tend to be all over the place that like to have music on, something like that. It'd be good to mix it up a little bit by meditating on something I'm studying on.
Yeah, I agree. Well, the article even says that people who are solitary are thinkers. And I think when you study or when you're trying to understand something on your own, I think it helps build stronger neurological pathways. I'm just throwing out big words. I don't know if that's actually what it means.
But I think it's legit.
I think we all understood what I was saying. But I think it does help develop our own problem-solving skills and our logical... Our, what's it called? Our deductive and inductive reasonings.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we take time to study things on our own and understand them on our own, I think those are stronger as well.
Yeah, I think oftentimes it just depends on the type of person you are as well.
Yeah.
Because I think that a lot of people are able to do that kind of deeper thinking, problem solving by themselves. Whereas other people, like, if you're just by yourself, you're going to get super distracted and you're going to have, like, a really hard time and it's just going to be non-productive.
We were talking earlier and Malcolm in the Middle came up. And I didn't, to be honest, never saw a whole lot of episodes of that.
I love that.
One of my
show.
Favorites is when his brother, who's at the military school, has to finish a paper. And his partner, who's already done all of his work, is trying to help him. And he just, Malcolm's brother just keeps on getting distracted. And at one point, the partner has literally cleaned everything out of his room. Like, all that is in the room is, like, a desk, a pencil, a paper, and a chair. And Malcolm's brother is like, you're forgetting something. He's like, what? And he like, points to the pop can. And he's like, how's that distracting? And he picks it up and goes, crinkle, crinkle. And he swipes it out of his head and throws it out of the room. Yeah, but it's true. If you're going to study in isolation, you have to understand your limitations. You have to be prepared, and you have to be accountable to yourself. And it might even be useful to be accountable to somebody else. You know, if you're going to study alone, you got a roommate. Be like, hey, can you check up on me in a half an hour? And just, you know, just let me know when a half an hour has gone by, so that I don't get stuck on tangents forever and just lose track of things.
Yeah.
You know?
I was gonna say, I just don't work well at home,
mm-hmm.
Because even though I am by myself, there's so many distractions at home.
Yeah.
So I think part of studying on your own in a solitary environment, you have to make sure it is conducive to learning. So for example, work, I do at work. And
yeah.
I, even though there are people around me, I do my work by myself and I'm so much more productive. And the same with studying. I studied much better on campus if I the majority of my studying was done on campus in the library or in the business school,
mm-hmm.
it was a lot easier to study on my own, even though I may have been around people.
Yeah, and I mean, this is why we have the private study rooms on campus. This is why one of my favorite places to study was an old dilapidated sofa in a back stairwell. And it was like nobody used that stairwell. It was a clean sofa.
Where
but
was
it? It was in the Family Life building. It's no longer there. I've checked.
Sad.
Well, it's been 20 years.
I could have carried
almost.
The legacy, Dan.
But, you know, finding those solitary locations in an environment that is conducive to studying is important. I mean, so for people taking online classes at home, going to your local library, you know, go to a park, go to Starbucks. You know,
yeah.
Get out of the area that you're responsible for, you know, if that's your house, if that's your room, whatever, and identify a place where you can purely focus your study, where you can really dig down and not have to worry about those distractions.
Yeah, I think it's really just facilitating what's the best environment for you, right? Because it might be your room, it might be your house, right? It really just depends on, like, what is best for you and taking, like, that self-evaluation moment to be like, mm-hmm. okay, where am I going to learn best and where am I going to be least distracted? And then I think as well, having some kind of itinerary, that accountability you were sort
yes.
of talking about, whether that is with another person or even just, like, if you're a list person, I'm a huge list person. I have my list of things that I have to, like, check off and do every week. And so if you create some kind of assessment of, like, this is what I need to do in this hour or two that I'm going to be studying, I think that that's also really helpful, because I think that a lot of times solitary learning, while it is really helpful and can be really good to, like, learn problem solving and deep thinking, it also can lead to, like, perfectionistic tendencies.
Yes.
Which can end up being like, okay, well, now I just took 2 hours and I got, like, 2 minutes of work done.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that it's making sure that you have that accountability with yourself or someone else as well.
Yeah.
Well, speaking about other people, shall we compare with social?
You just stole my
learning?
Segue. I was going to say almost the exact same thing.
I'm getting better, Dan.
So social study. I mean, and of course the poster child here is the study group, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about
group
the
projects.
Study group. Well, you know, that
study groups, they're all the same.
Yeah, there's a big difference. Study groups are voluntary. Group projects aren't.
So true.
And I think that's an important factor, because people tend to resist things that they're forced into, which is one reason why people tend to have very negative attitudes about group projects, is because it's like, great, my grade is dependent upon other people. And you automatically go into a negative attitude. Whereas if you're like, hey, I'm putting together a study group, do you want to come?
Yeah.
Going into it voluntarily is a much, much better attitude.
I agree. Plus, I mean, you're all like-minded people at that point. You're like, oh, yes, we want to understand. Even if sometimes they're like, oh, I just want to hang out with some people. At least you have a common goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is important to notice. I mean, you can study as a group or you can study in a group.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, my wife, for instance, she always liked to study near me because my example, I guess, helped keep her on track. So she was studying mechanical engineering. I was studying history, but we were doing it together.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't helping each other specifically, but having that group accountability and stuff like that was very beneficial to both of us.
Well, yeah. I think that's where, like, the solitary and social kind of overlap. Like, with solitary, if you're studying in a group, you can be on your own, but you're also accountable to other people because they also see if you're not actually studying.
Yeah.
They see all the times you look at your phone or check, you know, some, like, your personal email or whatever.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I think that's a good way of how you can be both solitary and social at the same time.
Yeah. And that can be very useful as well, because some things like dealing with distractions, overcoming fatigue, in that sort of setting, you can notice, you can get help, I should say, you can get help with things you struggle with that are not subject specific. So, you know, like, hey, I need to, you know, what's the good way of taking notes? Or how do you keep yourself from falling asleep while reading this incredibly boring book? Or, you know, how do you keep from having to check it? And so you can be productive in your study, even though the person you're talking with is not talking to you about your subject.
Yeah, I think as well, just being able to have, like, people as a soundboard, that is what really helps me. A lot of the time I'll just be like, so I have to do this project and I know you know nothing about anything that I'm doing, but I'm going to talk to you about it for 15 minutes. Yes. Is that okay? And they'll be like, yeah, sure. But just being able to be like, these are my ideas. What do you think? How do you feel about it? Like, I think that this would be a really good transition because of this. I think that this would be really helpful. So in that case, like, I actually love group projects, even if it's like you're kind of like forced into them. Like, I love just being able to collaborate with other people and figure out how you can make something work that's not just conducive to yourself and your aesthetic and what you think is good, but being able to like have that with multiple people, I think can be really beneficial to the end product, at least for my mm-hmm. study.
Yeah. And having someone outside of your world looking in and like showing them what you're working on and having them comment on what you're doing is nice. It's an outside of the box approach.
For sure.
Having flashbacks to when my wife and I were dating when we were in college, and I remember one night she was had a project that was due, and it was an individual project, but she was so exhausted that she couldn't think straight, and so I was literally like, she was just about to the point of breaking down. Wow. And I'm like, okay, what is it you have to do? Like walking her through, like doing step by step through it. Okay, what's the next step? What do we have to do next? And she's like, okay, next we have to do this. I'm like, okay, let's go through the steps for this. And
yeah,
tell me what's next. You know, tell me so on and so forth. And she accredits finishing that project to me. and she, it was really kind of fun and yet really depressing at the same time, just because she was so exhausted. She was so tired and so just on frayed ends. I was very glad I was able to help her with that. Yeah. And that's another great example of how other people in a group can help with things that they may not have any experience with in terms of the subject material.
For sure. And it definitely like can motivate you to be able to create something mm-hmm. that would be better. Cause like, I think sometimes when I'm in group projects as well, I'm like, okay, this isn't just my grade on the line. This is everybody's grade on the line. And like almost that social anxiety, I guess, of being like, well, I don't want to get them all a B. Like if it was just me, maybe it would be okay. But like,
are you really going to be the jerk that gets us all a B?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And wanting to be able to like use those skills of sociality, not just in that setting, but being able to have that be a transferable skill, I think is really cool.
I think it's funny that when we ran the numbers on online classes for it's the DFW report, so D grades, F grades, and withdraw grades. Several years ago, we ran this report and found out that the classes that had the highest DFWs were online classes that were open entry, so you could get into them anytime, even up to 4 weeks into the semester.
Oh my gosh, wow.
No group work and no threaded discussions. Those are three things that people always say they want. They you know, people want to be able to get into an online class whenever, it doesn't matter, you know, they don't want to have to start at any given semester, you know, or at any given date. They don't want to have to do group projects, they don't want to have to do threaded discussions. So these classes ideally are exactly what everybody wants, and they had the highest D grade, F grade, and withdrawal rate of all of the online classes.
That is so, so interesting.
Yeah. I think that's something that helps me a lot in like online classes that I've taken. Kind of reminds me of how important it is really to have these other learning styles that we're talking about, yes. Right? That it's not just like single faceted. I think all of these learning styles that we're talking about need to be practiced in different ways for different situations. And I think for my way that I learn really well in online classes, especially since you can't be as social as a face-to-face and
it's a lot harder to strike up a conversation with a classmate. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. It kind of goes into our next learning style, which is oral, which I think is really important to have some kind of accountability with like recorded lectures or like those discussion threads or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Being able to learn in a multifaceted way of not just being like, okay, well, here's the textbook, read it,
and unfortunately, there are some professors that's what it is they give you the reading assignments. And I graduated history. Reading was just it was my bread and butter.
Yeah.
We had to read 4 to 8 books a semester, right? So I don't have a problem in having a class where it's just reading assignments. And I think it's important that a professor, in that kind of class, a professor needs to curate the reading. Like a biology 10-10 class where you are literally just have one textbook that you are reading all the way through, that's boring. That's mm-hmm. ridiculous. the professor should be adding things to it. So you're reading these sections of the textbook with these additional articles, or with, you need to have a variety there. But coming back to Aurel, you know, how do you implement audio into a reading only class? And one of those is one you can read out loud, for one, right? Because, and this is interesting, because I was at the symposium and they talked about how in one of the panels I went to, they talked about how our brains process the written word differently than it processes the spoken word. And so when you read something, your brain will work one way, but when you hear the same thing being read, it will pick up on other things. So reading out loud does both of things, those things for you. Now, it's predominantly, reading out loud is predominantly getting the hearing part or having somebody read it to you. So, but that's, use both parts of your brain.
Yeah.
Use as much of your brain as possible.
For sure. And even being able to like listen to audiobooks or different things. And I know that the, sometimes the voices on it can be kind of boring and not your favorite, right? Not animated and fun. And that kind of helps you figure out the distance of like, okay, well, I do share a room. Maybe I don't want to like be in the corner over my textbook reading my like textbook out loud to my roommate. But I think that being able to find ways where you can have that multifaceted learning is so important.
Well, there's all kinds of text-to-speech programs now. I've been seeing ads for the new Chrome extensions and stuff
I've
like that
too.
I mean that's the big new productivity thing, you
for
know.
Sure. And that is so helpful for people with like disabilities too, that are online learners.
I just think of how they tell you to put your essays, when you're writing essays, into Google Translate and just have it, and then just have it read it back to you. You can pick up on errors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so true. So what you said about, I didn't see there's the things I probably know, but like I don't realize, but like reading and then hearing, they do use different parts of the brain. I'm like, wow, it's so true. So that's why that works.
Yeah. And I think we talked about that in one of the episodes that you weren't here for, Alexis and I talked about it. Either that or it was before we started recording, I think.
Yeah.
What it was.
But I think, so this also talks about how oral can sometimes just have music in your learning environment. It's not necessarily learning in an oral way. Like I listen to music. It generally has to be like film scores or instrumental music. So I have this playlist of all these film scores that I would just listen to as I studied, and I wouldn't put it on shuffle. So it would become a background, and I didn't have to think about, oh wow, this is from this movie or this is from this show. I knew automatically what it was
from.
That's
why I can't listen to John Williams, because I do that with John Williams songs. I don't do it with other composers, but John Williams.
Yeah, I know this.
Yeah. I mean, like, and at first, like, if you're not used to studying with music or if it is distracting, of course, don't do it. Obviously, mm-hmm. You should, you know, do everything you can to make your learning effective. But, like, at first it was distracting, but once you got used to the order of the songs, like, my brain just kind of zoned it out, and I was able to focus better. Sometimes it's nice to study in quiet, but I don't know, it's kind of like what they say about chewing gum. Just having like a simple distraction to keep your mind occupied on something else helps focus on
for sure.
More and important tasks.
Yeah, and I think that also helps, once again, with people with disabilities. Like I have a really good friend who has ADD, and it's like debilitating. And so her just trying to sit down and like read something is like almost impossible. But when she's able to kind of have, like you were saying, that thing in the back of her head, kind of helping her keep quiet some of her mind, it was a huge learning switch for her. And then she actually graduated from college, which she never thought she was going to be able to do. So
awesome.
Exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. In oral, putting things into music, you know, I remember going through high school and I never had this happen for college, although I think I did hear of one or two people that did, but you know, the assignment was to like write a song based on something, you know. I just remember in high school we cheated. We just put it to the Star Wars soundtrack and read it like the beginning opening crawl.
So good.
But literally writing songs about something, writing a song for something, or you know, purposefully, you know, doing it as a preparing it as a speech, for instance, like writing a paper as a speech as opposed to an essay might be another great way of doing it. There are other ways of incorporating audio into your studying.
Yeah. So I was scrolling down to the verbal section because, you know, that kind of goes hand in hand with the oral section. And it actually suggests reading, like, the content out to yourself. So they're related.
Yeah, both sides there. with verbal, there's also a lot of linguistical stuff in there as well. Yep. Using word associations, acronyms.
It's like MIMAL for the states that touch the Mississippi River, I think is what it is. MIMAL, Missouri.
Mnemonic devices, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. I was like, what's it called?
Yeah,
mnemonic devices.
Or like
PEMDAS. I've never heard of the MIMAL one.
Oh, yeah. It's Louisiana, Missouri, Illinois, no, Iowa, Minnesota.
Okay.
MIMAL.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, I was thinking like PEMDAS, like like being able to do order of operations. Like, I feel like that's a huge one, right?
The FOIL method, first, outside, inside, last.
Exactly. Ugh. Yeah.
Things like that. There's a lot of, there's a lot of those. And then of course you can make your own. I do a lot of those with numbers. Like the way I remember numbers tend to be through the relationships of the numbers. Another with verbal though is teaching somebody else.
Yes.
And this is, going to Bloom's taxonomy of learning, in order to teach something, you have to be able to maintain, you have to understand it on a certain level. So if you get to the point where you can teach somebody that has absolutely no idea, that roommate that you're like, I know you don't know anything about this, but help me out with this. And now I'm going to teach you about it to show that I can learn, that I understand it. But imagine trying to teach a toddler, or maybe not a toddler, but like a 7-year-old. I've got a 7-year-old right now, and explaining things to a 7-year-old so that they understand them, you have to be very concise. You have to be marginally entertaining. And you have to be very, very sure in how you understand it so that you can put it in those simple, simple terms. If you can explain quantum physics to a 7-year-old, you're probably going to do pretty well on your physics test.
For sure. It's like that quote from Einstein that we were talking about, where if you can teach it to a child, then you can understand it yourself. And I think as well, like, just being able to explain it to anyone. Like, I think that, like, I have my boyfriend, he's going into aerospace engineering. So sometimes he'll, like, read out his problems to me, and I'll be like, I have no idea. That sounds very interesting.
You got too much of your alphabet in your math there.
Exactly. Me over here and with my, like, comm studies. I'm like, I just talk to people for most of my assignments. But I think that being able to find somebody who doesn't know anything about it and show them, like, the basic concepts, like, explain these big definition words, or even just, like, your roadmap for, like, a speech, like you were talking about, or a roadmap for an essay, can be so helpful to you being able to retain it and then be able to, when you're actually having to do the work, do it effectively and quicker because you already have talked it out and you know what's coming next and why it's helpful and that it already flows because you've talked it out with somebody already.
Yeah. I'm thinking about how many stories I've told or how many jokes there are out there. Is someone's going like, oh, I forgot to mention this, and oh, and you need to know this. Like,
yeah.
If you are telling somebody about something and you find yourself doing that, it's like, okay, I need to make sure I get everything organized. I need to make sure I get the organization right before I launch into this. And so that may be a fantastic way of doing your essays.
For sure.
You know,
that's how I've written all of my essays.
Yeah. Thinking out loud has always been a good way of organizing thoughts and that sort of thing. So that's another thing, both again, verbal and social.
Well, this has been an interesting discussion. I think we've talked about a lot of good points, and hopefully it will help you in your endeavors to study better, smarter, and to get better grades.
More often.
Yes, more consistently. We all know you're great students. But of course, we're on the social medias. If you have any questions or your own thoughts, let us know. We'd love to hear what your take is on learning styles, and we will see you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.